Well, my guest in the studio plays saxophone in a number of Sydney bands and has also performed and toured with such artists as Guy Sebastian and Jackie Orzechski. He's performed in festivals both nationally and internationally, most notably the Tokyo Jazz Festival, the Melbourne International Jazz Festival in Waimadelaide. Matt currently performs regularly for the Music of Viva in Schools program with The World According to James. And last Friday, most notably, he was announced the winner of the MCA Friedman Fellowship. Matt Keegan, welcome back to Now's the Time.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Frank.
Firstly, a big congratulations on your win last Friday night, wasn't it?
Yes, yes, thank you very much.
$15,000 in the bank?
Well, not yet.
Not yet? The check hasn't bounced, has it?
Yeah, I'm saving my true celebrations until it comes in. Money's cleared. I'm very excited and pleased to be getting a chance to have a chat about being the winner. It's fantastic.
Well, tell us how the MCA Fellowship works and what you had to do. You've got to put a project proposal in, don't you, and then perform in a live concert.
Exactly. Basically, each year about 16 musicians from around Australia get chosen and called and asked to be part of the Friedman Fellowship for that year, and you're basically asked to submit a proposal, like a grant sort of style proposal, what you do with, should you be given $15,000, and you submit your proposal along with 45 minutes of music on a CD or a DVD, and on the strength of that, four people get chosen to get to the next round, so to speak. You then have to have an interview with the judges, and then you do a performance, 25 minutes of a performance at the Opera House studio.
Now, specifically, your project proposal was a collaboration, I guess, with traditional Indian musicians.
Yes. In 2009, I travelled to India, and it was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had for lots of reasons. But the main reason was I got to spend a lot of time playing, and almost every day playing music with different people from all walks of life in all sorts of situations. And basically, I met a few people that I really felt I clicked with musically, and thought while I was over there, wow, this would be great to have a bit of a collaboration between Australian musicians and these guys that I know at home. And so when the Friedman proposal, I got the chance to write it, I immediately, that was the first thing that came to mind, and I sort of couldn't shake the idea. So I put pen to paper and came up with the idea of taking some colleagues from here in Sydney and making a brand new international cross-cultural ensemble with people over there.
So did you have interest in traditional Indian music or traditional Indian classical music prior to your visit to India?
I have a great interest in all music that's great. And so I not necessarily sorted out as such, but obviously you go through as a musician listening to lots of things, and every now and then you're just struck by something. And I remember the first time I was really struck by the Indian musicians was hearing the Australian Art Orchestra performing when they were doing their first tour with those South Indian classical musicians. My favorite part of the concert actually was when I heard the Indian guys, they got about a half an hour or 40 minutes performing by themselves. Not that the other part wasn't great, but just getting to hear them do their own thing was really ear-opening for me. And since then, I sought out a few other things, and obviously some great fusion bands like Shakti, and obviously Miles Davis used some tabla and things like that. So I've Zaki Hussain, and I know some of the sort of famous things. So I hadn't really sought out the underground or the with any great depth. On my travels to India, I got to see so many things, and I spent a bit of time with classical musicians, but actually most of my time was spent with folk musicians in India, in particular a group of folk musicians called the Baul musicians from West Bengal, and it's a sort of singing-based folk tradition that's a few thousand years old, and I got to spend time with these guys and their families, a few of them anyway, and just some amazing instruments, and got to chat to them. Some of them spoke English quite well, and got to chat to them about their concepts of music, and was really, just really excited and really inspired. And it was when I came home, while I was there, I wrote a lot of music, and subsequently it's really changed me as a musician.
Well, you're not the only Sydney saxophonist currently with these thoughts as well. Sandy Evans has been exploring the possibilities that both jazz and Indian music share.
That's right. Sandy's a great mentor of mine, and she was the first person I called when I started writing my proposal. I gave her a call and said, oh, do you mind if we hang out? And picked a brain about, you know, because I wanted to get across that I was in the proposal, that I, you know, wasn't afraid to seek some wisdom from people who know what they're doing or a bit further down the track. And Sandy helped me out a great deal, and I'm very grateful for that.
So what similarities do you think the idea of jazz and Indian music do share?
Well, obviously, there's the improvisational quality of some of their music. There's obviously some of the scales and things. There's a common kind of language there. Some of the things that I could bring to the situation, the harmony, they don't really use harmony in the Western sense. So that's something that that I felt that I could bring to the table, you know, in terms of collaboration. The other thing that I felt with these Bawal musicians was their really soulful singing, and it really resonated with me. It was almost, it just had a really heart-wrenching quality to it, just like you might hear some of the great jazz musicians when they play. The blues thing, but there's something else in there as well.
And, so an emotional depth.
Yeah, definitely. It was really something amazing, and that's what probably really got me in particular with these Bawal guys. I couldn't actually understand the words they were singing, but it was really got me on a deep level, the way they sung. And I got a chance to sit down and talk to them about it. And I remember asking one guy about breathing, because of a saxophone player, you've got to know how to breathe. And I remember he pulled up his shirt, and I could see his spine through. He was doing this yoga breathing technique, and I could see his stomach got totally sucked up into his rib cage, and I could see his spine through the front, you know.
Wow, that's incredible.
And, you know, these things like this that you just never get to see. And it was just like, oh, okay, so that's, you certainly know how to breathe and use your, you know, use your diaphragm and all of that kind of stuff. So little things like that. And, you know, there's such depth to their culture that as a, you know, Anglo-Australian, we don't have that kind of depth, just because we've come from such a young culture. And so it was really inspiring to be around something that had that much wisdom of the ages in it, you know, involved in it.
But this time the trio is in the company of David Addis as well on the alto saxophone. And he'll be going on tour with you, Matt.
Yes, yes. Yep.
And the title of the album is Matt Keegan Trio Meets David Addis. What struck me immediately from this album is the four etudes on there. Now, my limited understanding of that is it's sort of like they're short compositions used for practice.
Yeah, kind of. When I wrote the album worth of music, I wanted to have some parts of the album just featuring just the saxophones together without the band. And I thought of the idea of interspersing little duets between the band tracks, and
some free blowing in those pieces.
Oh yes, definitely. Yeah. Most of them I actually sort of hold the form down, and while Dave goes off on his beautiful improvisation little tangents, and except for one where I do a bit of improvising myself, but it's sort of designed just to feature the sound, especially Dave's got such a lovely saxophone sound, beautiful saxophone sound, so I really wanted to let people hear that without the noisy bass and drums in the way.
And that follows into a piece entitled Panch and Cat.
Well, that one is a bit of a funny story. I was lucky enough to, on my honeymoon, I went to with my wife to the Palenque in Mexico. It was a Mayan ruin. And in the jungle there, next to the ruins, is a place called the Panchan.
Panchan.
And one morning I went for a walk, and about 11 o'clock in the morning, and came across a little bookshop. And the owner of the bookshop was sitting out there drinking red wine, and I said, I sidled up next to her, and I, you look like my kind of person, and her name was Kat, and so we had a good time together while we were there, and I wrote this song for her, Punch on Kat.
You've performed a lot with what you call the maestro, that little contraption that you hook up to your saxophone on stage to produce these various effects. Mm. Will that have any place in your Indian music?
It may do, yeah. I think it might. I'm probably going to take something with me. I haven't actually, the maestro I probably haven't used for about 7 years now, because I've been using sort of newer technology. That's not to say I won't get back to maestro playing, but I've been using some other sort of saxophone synthesizer. And I'm constantly trying to update my rig to keep it you know, up to date and as cutting edge as I can, but it takes a lot of time and hard work. But yes, I do think I might take it, because it opens up a whole other sonic space to get into. And yeah, I'm probably going to play a bit of saxophone, a bit of clarinet, and a bit of electronic type type stuff. But when I get over there, it will become apparent what's actually necessary.
Shambati. Now, I googled that. That came up as a township in Sudan.
Oh, right. It's actually a little town in India where I met these particular Bawal musicians, actually. The place he lived, the guy who I was hanging out with a little bit, his neighborhood was called Shambati. And Chuva is another one on there. That means sort of light rain in Portuguese.
Oh,
I wrote that one in Brazil at a bar while I was watching the rainfall, so that's where that comes from.
So Baboy,
Babui, that's Baboy. A guy. He's an Indian classical, a sarod player, and I went round to his place and we jammed for a few hours together, and afterwards I wrote that music based on some of the things we were, the way that we'd been improvising together on that particular track, Baboui. We got into this thing, myself and this guy Baboui, where we'd play a little melody and then he'd improvise a little bit and then I'd improvise and then we'd play the melody again after each one, and I did the same thing on the track. We sort of stayed a theme, and each David Addis and I, we trade off, and each time we play the theme in between. It's only a short theme, and yeah, that came from him, this fantastic sarod player.
But what is it specifically about David's playing that you enjoy?
The thing that most grabs me about David's playing is his amazing saxophone sound. It's such a beautiful saxophone sound. And the other thing that I love about his playing is his passion and commitment to what he's doing and the soulfulness that he exudes in performance. And I just actually just love standing next to him while he's doing it, basically, and thought, well, I find it so inspiring. And ever since I first played with him, I think we were just jamming in his home. He's got a beautiful home up in Byron Bay. And every time we play together, we could just be warming up, playing a few notes, but it's always music. As soon as we start playing, he's listening and we both listen to each other. And there's none of this sort of rivalry type thing saxophone players often get into. It's just pure music and just blending of our sounds. And I thought, after I'd played with him a few times, I thought, wow, I need to write some music to feature this sound because I just love it so much. So that's where it all stemmed from, basically.
He has got a very original sound too.
Yeah, it is very original. And it's actually, the more I hear it, the more I hear things in it, because he got to work with some of Australia's best sort of known saxophone players in Mark Simmons. He worked with for a long time, and also he told me that he had a residency every week playing with Bernie McGann as well. And so every now and then you can hear a few notes that just sound, wow, that sounds just like Bernie, you know, or yeah, you know, that's a Mark thing or whatever, you know, but it's integrated into his sound. So, you know, Dave's got a great love of a great many of the American tradition. He's got that in there, but there's also a great Australian sound and concept in there as well, and that's what I also like.
Gumbo. Was this inspired by a New Orleans trip?
Yeah, I've been to New Orleans. I've spent a bit of time in America, and I just came up with this melody and just dedicated it to all the great things about the southern states of America, and gumbo is one of them.
Matt, thanks for joining me in the studio tonight.
Thanks very much for having me, Frank.
Once again, congratulations on your win.
Thank you.